On this episode of the Colts Corner podcast, the boys will interview Long Island champion Mike Kurubia. We'll talk NFL, college football, rivalry week recap, championship weekend coming up, a little hot stove for Mikey Stats, and a lot more. Let's do it. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Colts Corner podcast, episode 10 of this school year. I'm Douglas Latuca alongside Benjamin Dixon, Brian Flatow, Mike Garafa, and Mike Kurubia in studio for a live interview. I mean, let's get right into it. Brian, I want to let you start with the first question.
All right, Mike. First of all, congratulations. Long Island Championship, huge, huge accomplishment.
Thank you. But
I'm just curious, like, what was the team's mentality going into that Long Island Championship game?
Well, we all worked really hard this year, and it's an 11th-month sport, and our team's mentality this year is we are in this game for a reason. We can do it, and we out-physicaled them in all aspects of the game, and it was pretty fun on Saturday.
That's nice. It was a lot of fun to watch, for sure. And so going to that game, that's obviously the team's mentality. What did Coach Madden really do to make you guys think that way going into that game?
Well, this season was really dedicated to Mr. Madden. Mr. Madden passed away earlier this year, and the team's driven force was his spirit, and he really hung toed on that. So,
yeah, I saw a nice feature in Newsday on Coach Madden's dad with the lollipop at halftime. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Yeah,
of course. But going into that game, like Brian said, what were your expectations? Obviously, it was a 34-6 domination by you guys, but what did you know about Plain Edge going into the game, and how did it differ from the result?
Plain Edge was a preseason ranked 5 seed, and they haven't faced anyone really tough at all. The 2 and 3 seed in Nassau got upset in the first round of the playoffs, so they kind of had a really easy road to make it to the Long Island Championship. But we've been through the gauntlet with Save and West Hampton. They were really good, tough teams, and we just knew we were going to win.
Throughout the playoffs and throughout the season, how did the fan support and the crowds at the games, especially that Long Island Championship, help you guys win that championship?
Well, it's great when we have the fan support, and the school spirit was really great that entire week. And when we make big plays on the field and the fans really get into it, it only makes it that much more exciting.
So you guys came off of an amazing win coming out of West Hampton. So what is the momentum like coming out of that? That definitely had to impact your final game.
Well, yeah, we face blind opponents every week, and we really don't focus on it's just the person on the next person on the schedule.
That's nice. And one other thing, when we had you on earlier this year, you've said that it was the team's goal since summer workouts and everything to try and win this Long Island Championship, finally accomplish that great achievement. What's it like to finally achieve it?
It's great. I mean, hard work pays off, and the win still hasn't sunken into many of us. Like, it's crazy.
And now you guys get those rings, too.
Yeah, we get the rings.
That's great. So, Mike Kurubia, senior linebacker on the Long Island Championship-winning Hills West football team. Thanks for your time. Great interview.
Thank you.
All right. So, we will move on into... we'll talk a little bit... We spoke about the LIC, but we can talk a little bit more about that game. Real just... complete domination by Hills West from the opening kickoff, and it just looked like Hills West was just a better team.
Oh, bigger, stronger, more physical, Mike, and I know you can probably agree with that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely outplayed Plain Edge from the start, and one player I want to spotlight in this game, besides from Mike, obviously Gerald Filardi impacted all three sides of the ball, offense, defense, special teams with the kick return touchdown. We haven't seen that one from him, and he was just absolutely great on Saturday. And huge factor in the Hills West win.
Yeah, huge factor. He's definitely one of the team leaders. Mike, we play lacrosse with Gerald, and he does everything on that field, too. It's like, what's it like being on the football field with him, too, out there? Like,
well, me and Gerald's been playing football since we were 6 years old together, 5 years old together, and he's a warrior. He'll do anything for me, and I'll do anything for him. That's just the type of kid he is.
Yeah, he's a stud floor hockey player in gym as well.
Yeah,
really great effort. 100% effort in everything.
Had a few goals yesterday. So complete athlete on the lacrosse field, football field. I mean, if you put him on the golf course, he'd probably do well as also. So a complete athlete there in Filardi. Definitely a spotlight guy. We said his name a lot. Had a huge hit. Enormous. Had the crowd to its feet.
That was definitely a momentum changer, wasn't it? I mean, you have to pick up something from type of hit that pretty much electrifies the whole entire place.
And it was just the whole game was a physical. Honestly, it was a beatdown. It was Mike. You had a few huge hits in there.
Yep.
Davon had a hit right on our sideline that got everyone amped. Gerald with a few big hits. Cedric, Jake said everyone showed up for that game.
Yeah.
That's what goes into a 34-6 win, really.
Yeah, and that Filardi kick return as well, huge, really sparked the momentum for Hills West. And once Plain Edge's quarterback went out.
Yeah, he broke his collarbone.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Isn't that ironic?
Full circle, kind of.
Yeah. That's very ironic.
It really comes full
circle.
Wow.
So once he went out with the injury, you knew it was kind of over, similar to the way it happened with Filardi when he went out. You almost lose a little bit of your spirit on the sideline, and that's kind of what happened with Plain Edge. And you spoke about their weakness in their opponents, obviously in a weaker division. So getting to the LIC wasn't much of a challenge for them, but obviously Hills West came out victorious and just were the better team.
Yeah, really are the better team. You guys really played up to all those goals you had going to the game to out-physical them, the faceless opponent. We don't care that they're undefeated, whatever it is. You guys really lived up to that, and honestly, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Okay, so LIC, check off the list. We could talk a little bit.
Oh, wait.
What else?
Story of the Week came out this week. On
Story
the
of the
LIC.
Week.
Yeah, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah.
Got to promote that. I wrote it. Mike had some great quotes in there. Just great article. Check it out. Came out in the print this week.
All right. So thanks, Mike Carubia. Great job. I think he's just going to stay in studio, listen a little bit, maybe contribute some of his sports knowledge. Why not? Let's just keep adding. We also have a few of our younger sports staff members here. What do we got? We got Wichman, Constantine, Guardy, and little Dixon. You've heard Dixon on the podcast before. Pretty up and coming star, I would say.
Absolutely. This whole young staff, up and coming.
Totally. The future. We talk about it all the time, and these are the guys you'll be hearing next year.
The legacy. We need the guys to follow us. We're all seniors. No juniors. They were slacking a little bit with the
weak.
Podcast.
That's so weak. Weak.
So weak.
Come on, dude. And, I mean.
But we got a lot of sophomores and freshmen stepping in, so.
So the future looks bright for the Colts Corner, and this week in football looks very bright, as we'll start with tonight's game, a pretty solid one.
Absolutely. No, we got the top team in the NFL right now, the New Orleans Saints. They're taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Doug's not in his head right now. He wasn't really sure what he was introducing there. But we have the Saints and the Cowboys right now in Dallas. Dallas plays very well at home. Dallas right now, they look like they're in control of that NFC East, but that division could be up for grabs because they've played well these past few weeks, but not really so much before then, and we don't know what to expect from Dallas, really. But we do know what to expect from New Orleans, high-powered offense, up-and-coming defense also. I don't think it's going to be too close tonight. I really think the Saints are going to
I don't think it'll be too close either. I don't think it'll be a repeat of what Saints have done to teams earlier in the season. I think it'll be somewhat close for the first half, and then the Saints will pull away late in the game. But we talk about the Cowboys. They're really heating up at the right time. Wins over Atlanta, wins over Washington. The offensive line playing great. Zeke finally getting his stuff together, playing great, contributing for fantasy. And you can check out the fantasy football breakdown. Doug and I did that earlier today.
Outstanding show today.
Our eighth episode of the season, so check that out on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, if you haven't been tuning into that, it's a huge mistake. I mean, that's your guide to success. The amount of correct calls that Ben and myself have made on that show, I mean, if you're not tuned in, you're probably not doing well in your fantasy.
I have to say. Doug, you watched that game Monday night. You can't tell me you know who Jonnu Smith is if you didn't listen to the Fantasy Football Breakdown.
I mean, I had Gerald Everett in as a pickup. Who is that guy? That was even before Kupp went out. And the guy picked up a touchdown and a couple catches. I mean, those are the steals that you're going to find on the Fantasy Football Breakdown. So we love to bring you that. But going back to tonight's game, I think the Cowboys are red hot. They're figuring it out. They see the prize at the end of at the finish line. The division's up for grabs for them. They're going in on it. They just beat Washington, and I think they're going to keep this winning streak going and win that division. I think tonight's game is going to be a lot closer than people think. I think the Saints although they're electric, I think that Dallas is playing much better. Their defense
is elite.
Is figuring stuff out with Lawrence leading the charge. They've got a young secondary that's working pretty well together. I think it's a closer game than people think. In Dallas, of course, Saints probably win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas squeaks it out by three. It's just tough to go against the Saints and Breeze, but I'm just thinking Thursday night, maybe a little bit of an upset.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Probably not. But
I agree with you that it could be a closer game than people think.
I'm an optimistic guy. I want to see Dallas beat the Saints.
And I honestly think the Saints are going to kill Dallas.
Yeah, this is also our viewers.
What's the line?
That's coming
from
a Giant fan, but
it's a 7.5 point spread, and they're on the road. So you're telling me that you're going to give the Saints
a 13.5 point
victory? You think they're winning by two touchdowns?
Here's what I would say about the Saints. I would say that if they do go into Dallas and win this game, I don't think it's going to be by 3 points. I think if it's a close game, I wouldn't be surprised if the home team pull it out. But I think the Saints are going to go in there, and I think they're going to win by a decent amount. Is it going to be the 50-7 showings that we've seen from the Saints in the last few weeks? I don't think so. But I just don't know if you can do that on that Dallas defense, but. I do think that they're going to pull it out, and I do think if they do pull it out, it's going to be by a decent margin.
Well, quick thing here for the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott, in wins this season, he's rushed for 121.7 yards, and in losses, he's only gotten 68.8, which that's huge, too. That shows that he's definitely contributing to their wins and losses, and he's definitely a star guy. So if he's on, they might have a chance, but if he's not, then you've got to just count him out.
It's a nice tidbit there, stats. Pretty good.
Mikey's stats is on it these last few weeks. The guy's been incredible. We could talk about some other games coming up this week. We highlighted some on the fantasy football breakdown, but a huge game. The Vikings going up against New England, 4:25 start there. Two teams that I don't want to say have struggled, but they haven't been as powerful as we would have predicted. Both teams stumbling a little bit. Patriots recently figuring it out a little bit with their offense. But let's talk about this one.
Yeah, figuring it out is not scoring on the Jets. Anybody could do that, all right? You could score in the. They played the Jets last week, and it was close for most of the time. I think the Patriots are in a little bit of trouble. Will they win the division? Obviously, but I think I could win that division. I think the Hills West Colts can win that division. Honestly,
probably could.
The high school Long Island champions can win that division. So I don't think the Patriots are really that good this year. I hate that I'm saying it I love that I'm saying it, but I know I'm probably going to end up being wrong with it.
Yep,
like I usually am. But I just don't think Tom Brady has had it this year to the point where he has. He's like 15th best in all the categories this year. Look, I'm probably wrong, but I think the Patriots are starting to struggle a bit.
Brian, it's the Patriots. It doesn't matter how well they play in the regular season because at the end of the day, they're still going to have two games against the Jets, two games against the Bills, and two games against the Dolphins.
Exactly. That's my point. They're still going to win the division.
They're going to win the division, and the Patriots with Belichick and Brady always peak at the right time. It doesn't matter if it's now. It doesn't matter if it's week 17, or it doesn't matter if it's the divisional round of the playoffs. Actually, they moved into the bye of the playoffs with what you've said is an underwhelming year for the Patriots. They're still 8-3.
I definitely agree that it's a strength of schedule. They're playing games against the Jets, Bills, and Miami for
Let's see what they do late in the year when they go to when they play Pittsburgh. That's a big game.
I know, but
in week 15 or 16, one of those weeks they play Pittsburgh. That's going to show us really, because that's close to the playoffs too. So if they're peaking and they're playing good football, then they'll be able to handle Pittsburgh. If not, then Pittsburgh's going to wash them.
So six out of their 16 games are against the Bills, Dolphins, and the Jets. Like we said, I mean, I think that they pick it up when they play solid teams. Near playoff time, when it really matters, Tom Brady is Tom Brady. Probably the best quarterback to ever live.
And we'll see. Vikings on Sunday. Vikings by 30.
Let's see. I want to see what goes on against a pretty good team here. As we said, Steelers coming up in a few weeks. I think it's after this week. Let me see. Yeah. No, they're Oakland. Yeah, 2 weeks from this week. So not next week and the week after.
So 3 weeks.
Yeah. Good work. Steelers will play the Patriots in a huge game. Every year it seems like a pretty solid game against both of them. Patriots have the Steelers number. But that's as you said, 3 weeks away. So we'll evaluate it at that time.
We'll see how that'll tell us a lot about the Patriots, I think. I think we know what we have with the Steelers, though.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. Garofa seems to have some stuff. So.
I do, even though Ben kind of gave it to me. Adam Thielen.
Adam Thielen.
Well, I mean,
good job. It's okay. It's fine.
It's my first time ever reading his name. He's leading the NFL with 93 catches, and he's second with 1,100 yards, which is great. And eight touchdowns. He has eight touchdown catches, and last week he had his 900 yard game of the season. That's also really great. A big key player there. Thank you, Benjamin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too impressed with the Week 13 slate.
Not that great.
It's really unimpressive. But if we're talking about probably the biggest game all the week, besides that Pats Vikings game,
would have to be
the one that I'm going to.
Absolutely.
Steelers Chargers got flexed to Sunday night. Huge matchup. Both teams playing pretty good football. Both teams lost to Denver. LA 2 weeks ago, the Steelers last week. So this is the test for LA. LA's got to pretty much win out if they're going to attempt to win the division. It's tough to do it with KC playing so well. But it's a must-win for LA. Steelers trying to get back on track, maintain the first spot in that AFC North. And without Melvin Gordon, it could be some trouble for the Chargers.
Absolutely. I'm guessing on the fantasy football breakdown, you guys mentioned Austin
Eckler. Austin Eckler.
Right, stepping in for Melvin Gordon. He's a good back, but Melvin Gordon's a huge part of that offense. I'm hoping they lean on Keenan Allen a bit. I have him going against Gluck this week. But that you said a must-win for them. It's a must-win if they want to win the division. But winning the division might not be in their cards this season. The Chiefs have just played so well. I'm talking about for Los Angeles.
Yep.
I may have said San Diego. I'm not sure. I usually do.
Whatever, San Diego.
But for the Chargers, it's a must-win if they want to win the division. They're probably still going to be a playoff team, win or lose in this game. So I do like the Chargers this season, but I like the Steelers in this one at home without Melvin Gordon for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, I agree. And in primetime, Doug being there definitely helps out a little bit. But you can't talk about the Los Angeles Chargers without talking about Phillip Rivers. This guy has been a legit MVP candidate this year. Is he going to win? No. But last week, just an outstanding performance. Almost broke the record for the most consecutive completions in a row. And 26 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, over 3,000 yards passing this year. He's really been outstanding. And that weapon, Keenan Allen, that you talked about, Melvin Gordon, obviously Eckler can step in. He's been pretty reliable. We talked about that before, Doug, on the breakdown. But I'm looking forward to this game. Do think the Steelers pulled out at home. The Chargers haven't impressed me that much, losing to Denver at home a few weeks ago, just like Steelers did. But Denver's tough, getting hot. We can talk about it a different time.
Especially with the altitude.
Yeah, of course.
It's tough in Denver.
Of course. But
it's very tough in Denver, and it's a tough team to play, too.
Yeah, just one more thing to say about that. Big Ben on primetime. That's a scary man. I mean, it's his best performances are in the primetime slot. So we'll see what happens. Two very good teams this season going up in it should be pretty chilly in Pittsburgh on Sunday night. I'll be layered up. I don't know. What do you think? I'm thinking three Under Armours. Maybe
it's
going to be 20 enough. Below. I'm out there the whole game.
You can never wear enough.
I think it's
going to be 20 below, but it's going to feel colder.
I think I'm going three Under
right
Armours.
On the water.
Three Under Armours with a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and the jersey over that. But I can't. How do you fit the jacket?
Here's the plan. Take off the extra two Under Armours. You don't need that. All right, so you're going to go Under Armour.
Yeah.
You're going to go Under Armour, t-shirt, sweatshirt, jacket, jersey.
Can I fit the jersey over the jacket?
It's gotta be. Is it a big jersey?
It's the Antonio Brown jersey.
Oh, you wear that to school. That's not that big. I'm.
That's why I'm saying.
I'd like to change my answer. Here's a new plan. We're gonna go Under Armour, t-shirt, sweatshirt, jersey, unzip jacket. So you can see.
Also, make sure you get the long socks in there and the leggings.
Oh my gosh! I'm gonna have three pairs of long underwear on.
Of course,
two pairs of socks, boots, pants.
It's going to be cold.
Blanket?
It's going to be chilly.
Blanket?
My friend's going with me. Jesse Simon, shout out.
Big Chargers fan, right?
Huge Charger fan.
That's going to be fun.
Guy wants to be living in San Diego right now.
Have you ever been to Heinz Stadium?
I've only been to one football game in my life.
Really?
It was the last game at the Meadowlands for the Giants, and they got routed by the Panthers. Absolutely annihilated. Pretty embarrassing, honestly.
I've been to Heinz Field before. You're going to like it. Very nice.
You're going to like the way it looks.
Mustard.
I guarantee it.
The mustard seats.
Dude, I'm fired up. I've been waiting for this matchup for a while. Huge Steeler fan, as we know. If you've been a follower of the podcast, you guys know my devotion to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So it should be a fun weekend ahead. Let's talk a little college football. Last weekend.
Rivalry week.
Rivalry week. There we go. I couldn't say it in the opening. I still can't say it now. The rivalry week. A little recap. We actually have an article up on the website. Great job, Noah Gardy, on that one. Check that out. Pretty solid. But let's just talk about the games.
I mean,
that impressed us.
You can't talk about rivalry week last week without saying that Ohio State absolutely owns Jim Harbaugh and Michigan. 62-39. I expected Michigan to win on the road because they were just the better team this year, and I thought it was finally going to happen for Harbaugh, but it didn't. The revenge tour was canceled for Chase Winovich and the boys. And Dwayne Haskins, what more can you say about that guy? He punched his ticket to New York. He'll be a Heisman finalist. It's 396 yards, six TDs in the air. Unreal. Wide receivers, Paris Campbell.
He broke Drew Brees' Big Ten passing touchdown record, too.
Passing yards, I think.
That's what I meant to say also.
Yeah, you got Chris Olave, true freshman, showing out. I mean, it was just absolute domination. If you watch the game, there's not really anything more to say about it except for Ohio State just absolutely throttled Michigan.
Yeah, it was not close at any point in that game, really. Even from the beginning, Ohio State had that game on lock. And the real implications here is that Michigan will not make the playoff, and Ohio State now has a bit of a chance at the playoff. They looked like they were on the outside looking in no matter what happened before, but the fact that they actually completely washed Michigan in that game, had they have just won, I would say they still would not be in the playoff unless Oklahoma is losing. But now I think if they can beat Northwestern by a lot of points right there, and then if Oklahoma either loses or plays a close game against Texas, Ohio State definitely has a chance at that fourth spot in the playoff. And Ben, you're shaking your head. You don't think so?
I think if Oklahoma wins, they just have the inside route to Ohio State. And if Georgia-Alabama, the SEC championship this Sunday, I mean, everyone's expecting Alabama to win. Alabama's a lock for the playoff. It is what it is at that point. If they lose by Georgia to 10 points, they'll still be in because they're the best team in the country. But I think what the playoff did, the committee, by putting in teams like Missouri in the top 25, teams that like weren't in the top 25 in the past, and it just speaks to the strength of the SEC teams. I'm pretty sure there were 8 SEC teams in the top 25.
4 in the top 10.
If Georgia plays a close game against Bama, I wouldn't be shocked to see a situation where Georgia still makes the playoff at that number 4 spot, and I do not think the committee cares if it's a rematch in the semifinals.
I think that they do care a bit, and I don't think that they would get in over Ohio State or Oklahoma because you can't take a 2-loss non-SEC champion over a 1-loss Big Ten champion with a win against Michigan that was they absolutely throttled them in that game, or Oklahoma who won the Big 12 with some quality wins this season. I just don't think it could happen, but we don't know what the committee is thinking. So
I just think it's an interesting playoff. Only 4 teams make it. You have the 5 and 6 seed play in the New Year's Eve little matchup, right? They play in that.
No, the other matchups depend bowl. On conference championship.
No, that 5 and 6. Who
they
gets
don't necessarily play
five and
each
six
other.
It's the Big Ten versus the Pac-12 and the Rose Bowl, and you got a bunch of other bowls. They rotate every year.
Whatever. Got to expand the playoff.
Yeah, I think so too. I think most college football fans are in favor of that. I'm thinking 8 teams, the 5 conference champions, 1 group of 5 team, and 2 at large. I think that's just the best way to
Absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely, I agree.
It's another debate for another time.
It is indeed. Mike Garafa, right in front of me, looking up Mets. We're just waiting for the news. Rumors, Robbie Cano could be back in New York
for the Mets,
but in the blue and orange. We'll see what happens there. Guy McNeil seems like a solid player at second, though.
Yeah. Except Garafa claimed
he can play third base.
No. Garafa claimed, quote unquote, McNeil's a better hitter than everyone on the Yankees.
Better player, he said.
Better player. Sorry.
All right.
That was preposterous.
Okay. Easy.
I meant like overall better, like best.
No, there's like, no. There's no way to.
I didn't mean player. I meant hitter. I'm pretty sure I said
he's
hitter.
He's still not the best hitter on the. They have Aaron Judge. They have.
He's not even the best hitter on the Mets.
They have Giancarlo Stanton.
Yoenis Cespedes is a better hitter than this guy.
That's the debate. I'm talking about like hitting for average.
We haven't seen nearly enough.
Right, okay, so you're talking about a little slap hitter.
Let him get to his news.
And it's
okay. So I will like just want to. 2 things here in terms of Mets rumors and stuff. Obviously, the Robinson Cano things that are going on right now. The trade that they're talking about, basically the Mets and the Mariners are discussing a trade that would send Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz, their closer to the New York Mets. Edwin Diaz led the major leagues in saves last year. Definitely would be an amazing pickup for the Mets. And Robinson Cano comes with a lot of baggage. He's got 5 years left in his contract and a boatload of money on that contract. So what the Mets are hoping for is that they can get a trade in where they trade someone like Jay Bruce or Jason Vargas to get rid of that extra salary, and hopefully the Mariners will take on some of Cano's salary and keep it. But on the Mets side, they're looking to trade away probably Jay Bruce, hopefully Jay Bruce. And then the amount of the prospects that they're looking at to give away, it's I've heard like 20 different names of people that they could be involving in this trade. I've heard Dominic Smith. I've heard Justin Dunn. I've heard their first-round pick last year of Jared Kelenic, who I absolutely don't want them to get rid of because he's going to be the next stud. But it's a lot of interesting stuff for Cano.
Get rid of Dominic Smith. That guy's a bum.
He is a bum.
He was underperforming is an understatement. 2 years ago he came in, and last year. Just not a good player. Also, he was also out of position, too, putting him in the outfield sometimes. That guy's a first baseman, not getting a great opportunity with the Mets. Maybe he needs a little bit of a change of scenery. We've seen that with a few players. But I'm just going to add something right to our little outline. Big Ben, after the touchdown loss to the Broncos last week, came out this week and spoke about the drop by James Washington.
I talked to you about this
midway through the game. Ben and I did speak about this earlier, but I just want to clarify. He said that Washington should be able to make that play, and as a veteran, he should be able, and as a leader, he should be able to criticize other players. I have no problem with Big Ben saying that Washington should have made that catch. When I watched that replay, why are you diving for the football when you could have gotten 4 feet down and the throw is right in your breadbasket? I don't know what you're diving for, but I don't know why the media has to criticize Big Ben for talking about a younger player. Maybe Big Ben knows how to work with these rookies, knows how to motivate them without talking to them directly. Big Ben's obviously spoken to Washington after this drop. There's no way that they haven't spoken about what happened. Washington knows he should have made the catch. Washington knows that Ben has the right to tell him that he should have dropped it. And there should be no question that Ben's leadership is not at the top of the league.
No one's questioning the leadership.
Oh, yes.
What I'm saying, no one should be questioning his leadership. I believe you that there are people actually going out and questioning whether or not this is in his jurisdiction. It definitely is. He has every right to go out and criticize a player, especially a younger player in his team. But I just think he's wrong. I mean, it was a tough catch.
Oh, come on.
It's not like he put it on the money, though.
It wasn't a good throw. I think he had to dive. I think he had to dive at least a bit.
That's what I thought at first.
I saw the play live.
Dude, just run through the ball. Get your 2 feet down and roll out of bounds.
It's a tough play to make.
The dive caused the drop.
It was far from a perfect ball. It was far from a perfect ball. And I think if Big Ben is going to come out to the media and criticize
the player,
he's got to be 100% right. It's got to be in the breadbasket right there. Not a tough play. You can't criticize. I don't think he should be out here criticizing a young player for not making a tough play.
Yeah.
Well, he's being criticized by the media for that play. He's being asked about that, so he's going to tell them what he saw. He clearly missed Juju on a same play up the sideline, missed him by 5 yards.
Right.
That's a bad throw.
That was a bad throw.
The other
one was not a good throw.
The other throw needs to be caught.
Yeah, but you can't be throwing your rookies under the bus like that. What was he, your second round pick wide receiver at Oklahoma State? He was great in college, James Washington.
Yeah.
I know all about him, but obviously you shouldn't have dove for the ball. But I mean, it wasn't like the throw was on the money. It wasn't like it was a perfect throw and he dropped it. And Big Ben is just like, it lost us the game that he dropped that ball. No, you lost him the game when you did the freaking RPO and threw it and threw it right into the linebacker's hands at the 1 yard line.
Big Ben, it's part of being a leader is not only is. Because what you have to realize is when you say something in the media, in the NFL, everybody hears it, no matter what. He embarrassed Washington out there.
Come on. Washington's going to be fine.
He's going to be
this
fine.
This guy's
but he's
a future at our wide receiver
he's gonna be fine.
Position. He's fine.
Big Ben came out. He embarrassed him. He said something that that I don't think he should have said. If it's a play where he dropped the ball and someone asks you, why didn't you make a better throw? Then, yeah, you could say he dropped the ball. But if it's a play where it's, in my opinion, Big Ben's fault that he missed the throw by a bit, it's a 50-50 ball like that, I don't believe that Big Ben should come out and be criticizing such a young player like that. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I think that there's more to this. I think that they've obviously spoken about the play before. He's just trying to motivate the kid to be better. And you got to make that play. You're an NFL starting wide receiver. You got to make that play. It's a huge play in the game. And also, some of these guys didn't make plays during the game. It's not just the RPO at the end of the game that cost us. Look at the way that the Patriot game ended last year, where Juju ran the football down the field. We started our own possession, got the ball all the way down to the goal line, and bent through another pick. So
no, that was
when Jesse James extended for the end zone, and they called it a fumble or whatever. They didn't give him a touchdown.
But that was a touchdown.
Yeah, with the new rules, yeah. But there's other plays in the game that are costing the Steelers in these big games, and there's other plays like that catch is huge. You got to make that catch. But, I mean, obviously it's not a great look for Ben, but I don't think that his leadership should really be
I don't think it should be in question. No, I think
his character should be in question at all.
The undisputed leader of this team, but also he's not a guy with the best character reputation in the first place. So I don't think he's got.
True.
I mean,
yeah, whatever.
I just don't think he's losing.
The allegations.
Well, one thing that I could use that's kind of comparable to this that'll also help tie into the next part is when Noah Syndergaard was in spring training, or I don't even remember. I think it was spring training, his first year. David Wright went up to him, and Noah Syndergaard was like eating a sandwich in the clubhouse. David Wright went up to him and yelled at him and said, "Get out in the dugout and support your team." And it went public, and people were they praise David Wright because he's teaching this young guy, you got to go out there and you got to do what you have to do to try and help this team win, even if you're not even participating. So I think honestly, I don't think he did anything wrong. I mean, maybe you shouldn't do it the way that he did, but I honestly don't think that there's anything wrong with what he did. You've got to do something to these rookies, got to do something to try and get themselves up to where they need to be. And maybe something like that'll actually help them.
Another thing, Ben, you mentioned James Conner right there. I hate that James Conner is always going to be compared to Le'Veon Bell, no matter what, because it went through my head. It went through my dad's head when we were watching that game, and I'm sure it went through everybody watching. When he fumbled the ball there, immediately, just like that, instinctively, everyone said Le'Veon Bell doesn't fumble that ball. And it sucks because you're right, he doesn't. And James Conner made a mistake there. He's a young player. He fumbled the ball on a crucial drive. And maybe Le'Veon Bell doesn't fumble that ball, but whatever it is, the fact that the comparison made it sucks for James Conner, but it's just the way it's always going to be for him, and that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, definitely an unfair comparison. Who knows if Le'Veon Bell fumbles that ball in his rookie year? You don't know.
Exactly.
Right. And the unfair comparison is for the rest of James Conner's career, hopefully a very long and prosperous one with the Pittsburgh Steelers. For the rest of that career, he's going to be compared to Le'Veon Bell, which is a tall task. That was the best running back in the NFL. Last season, undisputedly.
There's no reason to fumble that football. You got a 20-plus yard gain. Just get yourself to the ground and move the chains. Ridiculous. Whatever. I'm over that game. We're flipping the page.
Topic.
Sunday night, I'll be there flipping the page on that topic. We're moving on to Mikey Hot. We're going
stove.
To the hot
yes.
stove. I know.
I thought you were going to the
Mikey.
Topic. I thought you were skipping.
Mikey stats. I know we're going right to the hot stove. Man. How could I forget one of the best segments in our show?
Patrick Corbin. Will he be a Yankee? I don't know. Grew up in upstate. He was a Yankee fan.
That's a
pitcher for the Diamondbacks. He was on his visit to the Yanks today. Saw a nice Photoshop. Looked pretty good. But I don't know. I think that solidified the rotation. No, Mike?
I think that'll be a good spot. I mean, honestly, I still think the Yankees should try to trade for somebody who's even better. But I think Corbin will be – I mean, honestly, the Yankees really need one of those pitchers who's going to just be the core of their pitching staff and is going to – to stand that over everybody else, like a Clayton Kershaw or a Madison Bumgarner.
I know you were saying Bumgarner.
Yeah, I think Bumgarner, even though the Giants came out saying that they weren't serious about wanting to trade him, I think Bumgarner, the perfect fit would be the Yankees because they need that guy to push them into the World Series and to get them that win. More pitcher stuff, going back to the Mets again. Noah Syndergaard reports came out today that the Mets they're motivated to trade Syndergaard this offseason. That ridiculous to me. I think it's stupid to get rid of him. He's a great guy, great player. Yeah, he had a tough season, but I think it would be just ridiculous to trade him away. And I think the only thing that would make sense, which I said to a few guys before, would be if they traded him to Milwaukee to manage to get Josh Hader out of that. You know, go Syndergaard for Hader, maybe get somebody else, because I think that would be a trade that Milwaukee would take. I'd give up Josh Hader for Noah Syndergaard. So I would love
electric.
That.
That
would be great, and that would help out the Mets bullpen, especially if they get Edwin Diaz, and I think that would make them an elite team.
Yeah,
give up one Thor for another.
Yeah, but if the Mets are into spending money this offseason, I think Andrew Miller could be a huge piece for their bullpen. If they're looking to spend the big bucks on a guy that's been dominant in the bullpen. His name is flown around a little bit, but you never know if the Mets are serious or not in these in this free agency.
We've been hearing Syndergaard trades for years.
They
now.
Usually don't spend big money, and they usually don't make the huge trade. So we'll see what happens with the Mets. I'm just not convinced that they're going to spend the big bucks. I want to see this Robbie Cano trade go through, so they solidify that second base. Robbie Cano still got it coming on. I mean, I think he still got it, but the PEDs really crushes you as a player.
And the problem is also the money with him. It's I hate being strapped to such a huge contract like that with a player that's getting up there in age, like Robbie Cano. And as far as trading Syndergaard, I don't see the point in trading a stud pitcher for another stud pitcher. When Syndergaard has been one of the faces of this franchise for years now, and he didn't have such a tough year last year. He had an injury in the middle of the season. It cost him a lot of time. When he was on the field, he was pitching great. I don't see a need to trade him. I just don't think we'll get the value back that he brings to this franchise as a whole.
Yeah, I completely agree. The only reason I brought up Hader was if for some reason they're absolutely, like, they're for some reason definitely going to trade him, which there's no reason for it, but if they're going to, I think that would be the only trade that I'd be happy about. And even then, I wouldn't be so satisfied about it.
So we'll see what happens with the New York Mets, see where they go this offseason, see if they spend the big bucks. Edwin Diaz would help that bullpen a lot, and so would Cano at that second base spot. But we'll see. Excited about the Yankee rumors?
I am too.
There's a lot of questions. A little bit too early, I think.
We'll see what happens.
In
Cashman, we trust. Come on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens at those meetings. That usually starts to pick up around those times. That's where you get a lot of the chit-chat going on. Got to tune into the MLB
Network love
for those.
Dude, Cashman has created a real-life bidding war for Sonny Gray.
I know.
Who I think's actually going to be excellent with
he will
team.
Be. He can't pitch in New York. He can't pitch under the lights with all that pressure. He's got to go to, like, Oakland.
Send him back to Oakland.
Go to
Cincinnati.
Give him to the White Sox, Cincinnati. One of those teams that are just not really that relevant, not great. So, Garofa.
Another thing I have here, the Yankees are actually looking at a run for Nolan Arenado next year to try and trade for him. I don't know if he's a free agent next year, but if he is, I think that would be great.
I think he is.
I mean,
obviously, that would be great. He's the top hitter in the NL. Everybody wants Nolan Arenado.
I'm just saying.
Why don't we just spend all our money and just get everybody?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you seem to do that anyway, and you still never win. So it's okay. So spend your money and don't make it to the World Series. We'll take it.
I think Arenado would change things, for sure.
Well, they said that about Giancarlo Stanton as well.
He's got 9 years.
Yeah, and you all yelled at him and said that he sucked, and you praised him when he was signed.
He carried us through the summer. That's all I'm going to say. All right.
He wasn't.
Giancarlo Stanton's a stud.
I'm ready for the
top. He's a stud. Disappointing first year. He'll be fine.
I'm ready for the
next segment. Topic of the week.
We are excited. I have one.
I'm fired up. Here we go.
We're ready. So, Ben, you're not allowed to look. Why are you? You were cheating.
Oh,
okay.
I didn't think you generated it yet.
I did generate it. The first topic of the week is, what weird food combinations do you like? So, I'm still kind of thinking about it.
All right, this is easy.
All right, then you go first so I can think.
Chocolate ice cream and french fries.
Ooh.
That's fair enough. It's like an old diner type where you're like,
I'm not even talking about the diner. I'm talking about Wendy's with the Frosties, of course. That's the original.
Yep.
Right there. But I'm talking about Robert Moses Beach. Every time I'm at Robert Moses Beach, you go over to the concession stand, you pick up some nice ice cream. When the ice cream machine's not broken, because it usually is there, I'm not gonna lie. They don't do such a great job over there. But when it's not broken, you get absolute failure. When it's not broken, you get that soft serve ice cream, that chocolate ice cream. A nice little plate of fries. Start dipping in. Hope the seagulls don't take the fries or anything like that. But if they don't, it's absolutely delicious.
And if they do, then you got a swarm of seagulls around you.
Yep. And that you hate to see that, but
you do.
It's the risk you're willing to take. Risk reward.
I got a good one. It's a concoction I came up with a few years ago. Pretzels and Frank's Red Hot Sauce. I don't have it often.
What?
Mike, do you know this thing for Frank's Red?
No.
I put that on everything. It's a blank, but
fill in the blank for yourself. Look it up if you really want. If you're really that into it,
put that stuff on everything.
But I don't know. It's a weird combination, but it worked. I tried it once to get the little pretzel crisps going.
Interesting. Mine. You're traveling to Premier Diner. This is very specific.
Okay.
So the chunks of chicken that they put on their salad, outstanding. So you get these chunks of chicken and you dip it into their orange sauce. I think it's probably their house dressing or whatever. You have that on a separate plate. Then you get your Belgian waffle with the strawberries
you
and whipped
and your
cream.
Oh, no, that was Brian Waffle.
That was me
Sorry.
Last week.
You get your Belgian waffle with the strawberries and the whipped cream. So you have your waffle and your chicken. You don't have to eat it together, but it's just too difficult for me to decide what to order there. So I just get both, and both of the plates are pretty much clean at the end. So if you really love to mix some stuff around, I really haven't tried to mix it up. I usually go one, finish one, then start the other one.
The strawberries are a killer there. You can't mix chicken and strawberries. Come on.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
Hey, I like chicken and I like strawberries.
You know what? I'm going to try that next time I get the order.
Wow.
And I will let you know how that tastes.
Mikey Stats.
Okay, so I have a very specific one. I don't think any of you will have any idea what I'm talking about, but there's this place up in Connecticut, pizza place called Pizza Post. It's actually really good. My dad went there when he was younger because he was born and raised in Connecticut.
Gotta look that up on the One Bite app.
He went there all the time. It's actually really good. The pizza's phenomenal, but their salad dressing is really good as well, so their salad's really good. What I like to do is I like to dip the pizza in their salad dressing. It's actually amazing. It's something that you wouldn't really think of, but pizza and salad dressing, it's a shocking combination.
My sister does that.
You know what? Yeah. I'm not so surprised about that because I've had, I go over down to Mario's, I get some chicken bacon ranch pizza.
Ranch on pizza
is absolutely electric.
That's good too.
So,
yeah.
And Ben, I know we've had the...
Wow! It's an 8.7. I'm sorry.
We got...
Prez didn't go there yet. It's in Greenwich, Connecticut, Mike.
Greenwich? Greenwich.
I've never been there, all right?
Give him a break.
All right.
All right, Adam. Deal.
I'm sorry.
All right, Adam. All right. Adam, Thailand. I don't even know what you said.
Thailand, yes, you're right.
Thailand.
There's four reviews on the One Bite app, 8.7.
Wow. I mean, that's a high rating.
Dave's not giving it that range. But
it's very
shout out Barstool. But,
it's about that you can fit about like 50 people in the place, but it's really good. It's worth it.
I mean, if it's 8.7 on the app, not from the – I would say he's going to give it about a 7.5
of course.
To an 8.
He's
a low
he's
rating.
He's always in the 7 range around there.
You got
to
be realistic.
If it's a good pizza, it's getting a 7.5. That's a great rating as a pizzeria.
That is true. Rose's Pizza had a great rating.
Rose's Pizza
is absolutely
dude,
electric, though.
That place is packed to the brim. You can't even get a seat. But once you get that pizza, it's some of the best pizza you've ever had.
Mouth-watering stuff.
All right. Garofa, give me the next topic.
The next one. This one's a little weird. How do you think the world will end?
Oh, my.
Oh.
Sun. It's got to be the sun.
Bold prediction. Never.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. It's going to be the sun.
It's got to be the sun.
Buckle.
Okay. Oh.
I don't really know the science.
No, I'm just trying to be controversial here. It's the sun.
Okay.
One more. Let's get
we'll go for one more.
That's a bad one. I don't like that.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
I don't like thinking about the end of the world. It scares me.
What is your least favorite subject in school?
Oh, my. It's got to be math.
Stop listening, Ms. Powers. It's math.
Ms. Powers,
I know you're listening, but it's math. I'm sorry.
I've enjoyed math this year. You know, moved my seat to the front of the class. Opened up my mind to a
whole other world.
Some new people, some new information, and... I've enjoyed math this year. I got to go with psychology. I'm sorry. I mean, the class is tough. I thought it was going to be interesting. That's why I took it. But it's tough.
Yeah, well.
You can't sugarcoat
like
it.
Ripping,
it's a hard
you're
class.
Like, you're ripping your hair out in that class.
I never took it. But I actually like math. It's been my favorite subject since I was younger. But my least favorite, though, it is a math subject. Got to be geometry.
Oh, you got part
grotesque.
I understand.
Yeah,
all math.
Geometry
yeah.
is by far the worst thing that's ever been existed. Whoever invented geometry needs to be like, I don't know. There's something's got to happen to them because
well,
they're...
that's just false. Because
they're just trying to advance mathematics over there.
Whoever said
that
we need to learn it, they are also they need to be
that's
thrown
fair.
In a cage.
But the worst, probably dead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You can hate geometry. I hate calculus. You can hate all that. The worst class in this school. Is honors algebra 2.
I was actually really good in that class.
I think we
actually,
could all
I wasn't
agree
in
on
honors,
that. Any younger kids listening, I'm sorry. If you're in advanced math, you'll take it in 10th grade. If you're Regents level, you'll take it in 11th grade. It is a tough class, and you guys aren't going to like it. I'm sorry. It's just honors algebra 2. That thing is wow.
All math, Regents, I hate.
Common core. Ooh. Get me out of Common Core. Thank God. We don't have that
Doug
anymore.
Doug and I, we rocked Regents Algebra 2 with Ms. Powers. That was awesome.
Yeah,
fun
but
class.
All math, not great. And foreign language is just a little bit of a joke. I can't stand it. I think it's...
I agree.
It's interesting. I want to learn a language, but it's just a lot of work. Very confusing. It's very similar to math. Confusing.
You were yelling
confusing.
A lot in
Confucius.
Italian.
It's Confucius.
We speak English. That's why we do a podcast. We're very, very intelligent.
Articulate.
In the English language, very good.
Yeah.
Another great vocab word. Brian.
He's been the king of these words in the last 2 years.
Outstanding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
We have one more.
One more?
Let's do one more.
The second one was garbage. It's some of them are like they're stupid and I can't figure it out. But this one I think could be interesting. What do you think the best invention is?
Oh gosh.
All right.
This is hard.
Another one you got to think
about. I'm not
going
to go with sliced bread because that's too original.
I might go with something food oriented.
No, here, I got mine. The wheel.
Okay.
Well, that's weak.
You know what? That's what they always say, but no, I'm changing my answer.
No, but it really started all the technological advancements.
The wheel's great. It's just the first thing that came in my head because the reinventing the wheel, whatever, it's free, so who cares? The wheel is cool, for sure.
Yeah, the greatest invention for
it's
me.
It's not mine.
It's got to be sports.
Sports.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I thought this topic is not meant to be about sports.
The pigskin. But if we're not talking about sports, I'm going to go with chocolate chip cookies. Made, invented, invented on accident. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No,
chocolate chip cookies were invented on accident. They were usually just like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, but they forgot the chocolate cookies. They used a different type of sugar, whatever it was. That's how the Toll House cookies came about. And my mom makes great chocolate chip cookies. Rye,
she does.
Can you testament to that?
Phenomenal.
They're good cookies. And,
they are outstanding. I have.
And I'd like to thank the person who accidentally made chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to look that up right now.
You have the absolute best background for chocolate chip cookies. I never knew any of that.
Ben loves chocolate chip anything. Chocolate chip pancakes, yep. Chocolate chip
fun
shoes.
Story about chocolate chips
chocolate
and Ben.
Chip anything.
One time, so it was, what's it called? It was Passover, so me and Ben couldn't eat bread. And we were at our buddy Skaggs' house, you know? Everyone's eating bread, whatever. Me and Ben, we go in, we look what doesn't have bread in his house. The one thing, chocolate chips. That's it. We opened up a bag of chocolate chips, you know, the stuff you put in the cookies. And wow,
chocolate chips are really
good. Annihilated the bag.
I got an update. Yeah. I got an update.
Oh, no.
From BusinessInsider.com.
No, it's about chocolate chip cookies.
Quote, the invention of the chocolate chip cookie happened in 1930 when Ruth Graves Wakefield and her husband, Kenneth, were running the Toll House Inn, Toll House Cookies, on Route 18 near Whitman, Massachusetts. And let me just scroll through here. She started to bake. Ruth discovered she was out of baker's chocolate. She then chopped up a block of Nestle's semi-sweet chocolate that had been given her by Andrew Nestle of the Nestle Company. She expected the chocolate to melt and disperse through the cookie dough, but it didn't. They became chocolate pieces, and that's how the chocolate chip cookie was invented.
It's fascinating.
Ben!
Unreal. 2030, we're 1930, we're almost approaching the 90th anniversary of the chocolate chip cookie. So.
Imagine what life was like in 1929, right before the chocolate cookie was invented.
What a disaster.
Actually,
it really was a disaster.
No, but it really was.
It was a complete
Maybe
debacle.
That's what ended the Great Depression.
The Great Depression.
That was a video that I put on there. That was announced. That was an incredible video.
It was.
What a time, Miss Madden.
Mike, you gotta give your mention, man.
I don't have one, Doug. Do you have one?
I already said sports. Come on.
Yeah, but we were trying to go away from sports.
No, it's sports.
It's sports.
Without sports
is the greatest invention. Mm. I'm gonna second that. Get out of here, wheel. It's sports.
Yeah, without sports, we wouldn't be talking on this podcast we have now. And you wouldn't be listening to it. So, as always, we would like to thank you for joining us. And
I didn't get to have mine.
You said you didn't have one, right?
I'll go for the internet. The internet's great.
That's all right. The internet's cool. Whatever. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Good.
Do the closing.
On the fly.
Do the closing.
Go ahead, Ben.
So, we would like to thank the following people: Mr. Doxy, Mr. Ashuti, Dr. Capano, and the administration, the Board of Education. Our audience listens every Thursday. And finally, thank you to the class of 2016 for their very generous donation towards our podcast setup. Thank you to the sports staff for joining us today, the people that stuck around: Tyler Wichman, Ryan Dixon, Constantine. Thank Mike Carubia for the brilliant interview he gave us. And alongside Mikey Stats, Talk Stuka, Brian Flatta, I'm Ben Dixon. We will see you next week. Oh.